Have you ever considered how you would protect assets for your kids from a previous marriage while making sure your current spouse is taken care of? You know, it's a question that highlights the often complex intersection of family dynamics and estate planning. And today we're diving into a case that tackles this very dilemma. Cars and TV Shoe Crone.
Yes, it's a landmark case in Maryland
Okay.
that completely changed how we approach estate planning, especially when trusts are involved.
So this case revolves around Jule Shukran, who was diagnosed with terminal cancer and wanted to make sure his daughter Lauren from a previous marriage would be financially secure after his death. She also wanted to provide for his current wife, Kathleen. So he created a trust for Lauren.
Seems reasonable,
Yeah,
right?
it does. But things got complicated after Gilles passed away. Kathleen contested the trust, arguing that it was designed to cheat her out of her elective share.
Elective share. I think we need to pause here for a second.
Sure.
And explain what that means for our listeners who might not be familiar with the term.
Absolutely. An elective share is basically a legal safety net for surviving spouses. It gives them the right to claim a certain percentage of their deceased spouse's estate, even if the will or trusts try to exclude them.
So Kathleen was essentially saying, hold on, I'm entitled to a portion of Gilles' estate, and this trust shouldn't cut me out.
Exactly. The case went to court, and it was a real roller coaster ride. The trial court initially sided with Gilles' estate upholding the trust.
Oh.
But then the appeals court overturned that decision, relying on a very strict interpretation of the law.
Wait, so you're telling me that in Maryland you can't set aside money for your kids in a trust and still have any say in how it's managed?
Well, that's how the appeals court saw it. They were applying a rule from a previous case, Nell v. Price, which essentially said that any control retained by the person who created the trust meant they were trying to defraud their spouse. They viewed it as a way to keep the assets technically his while appearing to give them away.
That seems incredibly rigid. So what kind of control did Gilles actually have over this trust? Was he spending the money on himself or something?
Not at all.
Okay.
Gilles had the power to amend or revoke the trust and also served as the initial trustee. So on paper, this gave him the authority to make changes, but there wasn't evidence suggesting he actually did.
So it was more about the potential for control rather than actual misuse of the funds.
Precisely. And that's where the Maryland Court of Appeals stepped in and essentially said, hold on a minute, let's not jump to conclusions. They rejected this black and white approach and introduced a seven-factor test to evaluate these situations more comprehensively.
Seven factors.
Yes.
Now, this is where things get interesting. I have a feeling these factors are crucial to understanding how this case reshaped estate planning in Maryland.
You're absolutely right. These factors shift the focus from a rigid rule to a more nuanced examination of the intent and circumstances surrounding the trust.
Okay, let's unpack these seven factors one by one and see how they apply to Gilles' situation. What's the first one?
The first factor considers the degree of control the deceased person retained over the assets in the trust. In Gilles' case, he could theoretically modify the trust. But did he actually use that power to reduce what Kathleen might inherit?
So it's not just about having the ability to control the assets. It's about whether that control was actually used in a way that disadvantaged the spouse.
Exactly. The court wants to see actual evidence of intent to defraud, not just theoretical possibilities.
Okay, what's the next factor on this list?
The second factor delves into the deceased person's motives for setting up the trust. Was Gilles genuinely trying to provide for his daughter, or was there something suggesting his goal was to specifically disinherit Kathleen?
That seems like a tricky thing to prove, trying to get inside someone's head after they're gone.
It can be, and the court acknowledged that. While intent to defraud is relevant, it's not the only deciding factor. It's about weighing different factors and looking at the overall picture.
All right, so we've got control and motive. What's the third factor the court wants us to consider?
The third factor looks at the proportion of assets transferred to the trust compared to what remained in the estate. Essentially, did Gilles put a huge chunk of his wealth into the trust, leaving Kathleen with practically nothing, or was it a more balanced distribution?
So the scale of the transfer matters. Makes sense. What's next on our list?
This one's particularly relevant in Gilles' case, the timing of the transfer in relation to his death. The fact that he created and funded the trust just a few months before he passed away definitely raises some red flags.
I can see why that would be suspicious. The closer the transfer is to the time of death, the more it might look like a last-minute attempt to shield assets from the spouse.
Exactly. The timing feeds directly into the question of whether the transfer was part of legitimate estate planning or a deliberate move to deprive the spouse of their rightful share.
We're halfway through the list now. What's the fifth factor we need to understand?
The fifth factor examines the level of involvement of the person receiving the assets, the transferee. In this case, that's Gilles' daughter, Lauren. Did she play an active role in setting up the trust or influence her father's decisions?
That's interesting. So if the beneficiary had been heavily involved in the process, it might raise suspicions about potential manipulation or undue influence. But here we're talking about his daughter, someone he'd naturally want to provide for.
Right. The court is looking for any signs of collusion or pressure that might indicate an attempt to defraud the surviving spouse.
Okay. On to factor number six. What do we have?
The sixth factor focuses on the relationship between the deceased person and the transferee. It goes back to what you just mentioned. The fact that Lauren is Gilles' daughter from a previous marriage adds another layer of complexity.
It does, because providing for your child is generally seen as a legitimate part of estate planning, even if it might reduce the surviving spouse's share.
Exactly. The court even stated that an arrangement providing for children from a prior marriage facially appears legitimate. This doesn't automatically mean it's always okay, but it's a crucial factor to consider.
All right, we're down to the final factor. What is it?
The seventh and final factor considers the financial impact on the surviving spouse. The court wants to understand how Kathleen's financial well-being would be affected if the trust assets were excluded from the estate. Would she be left in a difficult position, or was she otherwise provided for?
So it's about assessing the overall fairness and reasonableness of the situation for the surviving spouse.
Exactly. The court is trying to strike a balance. They want to protect spouses from being treated unfairly, but also allow for legitimate estate planning, especially in situations involving blended families like this one.
This is all so incredibly nuanced.
Yeah.
It's like the Maryland Court of Appeals threw out the old rule book and said, let's look at the whole story, not just one single factor.
That's a great way to put it. They recognized that a rigid approach wasn't working and that we needed to embrace a more holistic, context-driven approach to these cases.
So what happened to Gilles' case after the Court of Appeals laid out this new seven-factor test? Did they decide whether the trust was valid or not?
They didn't give a final ruling. Instead, they sent the case back to the trial court to be re-examined using these new guidelines.
Wow. So no easy answers here.
Nope.
It really highlights the complexity of these situations.
It does. And it underscores the importance of careful planning and seeking expert legal advice when navigating estate planning, especially with blended families.
I can't wait to hear more about what this means for people planning their estates and for the lawyers advising them. But first, let's take a quick break. So we've just explored this fascinating seven-factor test.
Right.
The Maryland Court of Appeals created to address the complexities of trusts and elective share claims.
Mm-hmm.
But let's shift gears for a moment and get practical.
Okay.
What does all this mean for our listeners who are thinking, okay, this is all very interesting, but how does it apply to me?
That's the crucial question.
Yeah.
Carzindy v. Shoecrown isn't just an abstract legal debate. It has real-world implications for anyone planning their estate, particularly those with blended families or considering using trusts.
So let's dive into those implications.
Okay.
What are some key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, first and foremost, this case highlights the absolute importance of documentation.
Okay.
If you are setting up a trust, especially if you're retaining any control over the assets, document your reasons clearly.
Mm-hmm.
A simple memo explaining your estate planning goals and the rationale behind the trust structure can be incredibly powerful.
It's like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs for the court to follow.
Exactly.
Knowing him that you aren't trying to hide anything or pull a fast one on your spouse.
Exactly. Transparency is key.
Right.
The court is always looking for evidence of good faith, and clear documentation is the best way to provide that.
Yeah.
It demonstrates that you are thoughtful and considered the interests of all parties involved.
So don't be shy about explaining yourself. It's better to be overly thorough and clear than to leave things open to interpretation, especially when it comes to something as sensitive as estate planning.
Absolutely. And this leads to the second key takeaway.
Okay.
Be mindful of the control you retain within the trust.
Okay.
While the court rejected the rigid rule from Nell v. Price, it's still wise to avoid excessive control if you want to protect the assets from potential elective share claims.
So maybe think twice before naming yourself as the sole trustee or holding on to the power to unilaterally amend or revoke the trust.
It's a balancing act.
Right.
You need to weigh your desire to protect assets for specific beneficiaries, like children from a previous marriage, against the potential for those assets to be considered part of your estate for elective share purposes.
Right.
Relinquishing some control might be a strategic move to strengthen the legitimacy of the trust.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's not just about what's legally permissible. It's about what's strategically sound in the context of your overall estate plan and family dynamics.
Precisely. And here's another point that often surprises people.
Go ahead.
Don't assume that TOD accounts, those transfer on death accounts,
right,
are automatically immune to elective share claims.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I thought TOD accounts were designed to bypass probate and transfer assets directly to a beneficiary?
They are, but the court in Carson T made it clear that even TOD accounts still need to be scrutinized using the seven-factor test.
Hmm.
It's not a foolproof way to sidestep elective share considerations.
So even though TOD accounts avoid probate,
right,
they might still be pulled back into the estate for the purpose of calculating the elective share.
Exactly.
That's a crucial detail for people to understand.
Absolutely. The takeaway here is that no single strategy or legal tool is a guaranteed shield against potential disputes.
Okay.
It all depends on the unique circumstances of your case, the nature of your assets, and the relationships involved.
That's why it's so critical to work with a knowledgeable estate planning attorney who can guide you through these complexities and help you craft a plan that reflects your specific goals and minimizes the risk of conflict down the road.
I couldn't agree more. Trying to navigate these waters on your own can be incredibly risky.
Yeah.
A skilled attorney can be invaluable in helping you understand the nuances of the law, anticipate potential challenges, and create a plan that truly reflects your wishes.
You mentioned earlier that this case has been a real game changer in Maryland.
Yeah.
Are there any other gems of wisdom from the court's opinion that lawyers should keep in mind when advising their clients?
There's a particular quote from the opinion
that's
become a touchstone for estate planning attorneys. An arrangement providing for children from a prior marriage facially appears legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
This statement is incredibly significant because it acknowledges the unique considerations that come into play with blended families.
That is a powerful statement.
It is.
It seems to give attorneys a stronger foundation to advocate for clients who want to ensure their children from previous relationships are taken care of.
Exactly. It reinforces the idea that estate planning for blended families requires a nuanced approach.
Right.
One that balances the interests of all parties involved and recognizes the validity of providing for children from previous marriages.
This is been incredibly enlightening.
Good.
Before we move on,
yeah,
is there any final wisdom you'd like to impart to our listeners as they grapple with these complex issues?
If there's one overarching message I want to emphasize, it's the importance of open and honest communication.
Okay.
Talk to your spouse, talk to your children, talk to your attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Estate planning isn't just about legalities and paperwork.
Yeah.
It's about relationships and ensuring your loved ones are taken care of in a way that reflects your values and minimizes the potential for conflict.
You're so right.
Yeah.
It's about creating a plan that brings peace of mind, not discord.
Precisely. The goal should always be to create a plan that everyone understands and that minimizes the risk of disputes down the road.
Right.
That's the true measure of successful estate planning.
This naturally brings up a crucial question.
Okay.
How do you achieve that balance? How do you provide for all your loved ones while navigating these complex legal and emotional issues?
That is the million-dollar question, and unfortunately, there's no easy answer. Every family is different. Every situation is unique.
It sounds like estate planning, especially when you're dealing with blended families and trusts, is less about finding the perfect solution and more about navigating those gray areas with careful planning and open communication.
You hit the nail on the head. There's no magic formula or one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
It's about understanding the legal landscape, being proactive in your communication, and seeking expert guidance to create a plan that's tailored to your unique circumstances and minimizes the potential for conflict.
This deep dive into Carson V. Shulcrown has really opened my eyes to the complexities of estate planning.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, what final thoughts would you leave our listeners with as they embark on their own estate planning journeys?
I think the most important thing to remember is that the court is increasingly emphasizing a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about checking boxes or finding legal loopholes. It's about demonstrating your intentions, acting in a way that's fair to all parties involved, and crafting a plan that can stand up to scrutiny if it's ever challenged.
It's not about outsmarting the system, but working within it thoughtfully and ethically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And remember, this case highlights the importance of staying informed.
Okay.
Laws and precedents are constantly evolving, so it's essential to have a knowledgeable estate planning attorney by your side who can guide you through those changes and ensure your plan remains valid and effective.
This deep dive into Carson v. Sure Crown has been incredibly illuminating.
Good.
It's a case that has truly reshaped the way we think about estate planning in Maryland and beyond.
Absolutely.
If our listeners are thinking about creating a trust or updating their existing estate plan, what's the most important first step they should take?
Start with a conversation. Talk to your spouse, talk to your family, and talk to a trusted estate planning attorney. Open communication is the foundation of a successful and conflict-free estate plan.
Okay.
It's the best way to ensure everyone understands your wishes and to minimize the potential for misunderstandings or disputes down the line.
Those are wise words to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep those estate plans updated.